Have you had your soup today?
And the cold, crisp taste of Coke is so satisfying, it keeps me from eating something else that might really add those pounds.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Welcome to another episode of Sheologians. Should I be saying whenever you are? That's like never occur. Morning, afternoon, and evening is not a location.
Well, so first of all, I think it might be a little too late to change it.
It's too late. Okay.
Second of all.
Okay.
Second of all, I think it's.
What time zone you're in.
I think that our intro sort of encapsulates when and where.
Okay.
So whenever you are and wherever you
and
are.
And wherever you are.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
All right. Yeah. Welcome to another episode of Sheologians. We are here today to put the her in terror. I feel like I've used that before, but we don't care. Those are the rules. My name is Summer Yeager. I'm here with my beautiful co-host, Joy. And, okay, I need you to, I think I know your answer, but this is an ongoing conversation that I have with
okay.
my husband.
Okay.
Maybe. Conversation's a nice word for disagreement.
Okay.
So I have absolutely zero problem, zero qualms with pausing or putting a bookmark in a book in the middle of a chapter. If I feel like it, I will pause an episode and not come back to it for a day or two or a week if I don't want to in the middle of the episode. I don't care. Like, I don't have to finish an episode. I don't have to finish a movie. I don't have to finish a chapter. Like, I don't care. Like, if it's just time for me to turn the TV off, if it's time for me to put the book down, if it's time for me to turn the song off, if it's time for me to turn the podcast off, like, whatever it is, I'll come back to it. Like, I don't have to finish. I don't have to finish. Because I'm the boss of the content. The content is not the boss of me, is how I feel. And my husband is like, no, if you have like 3 pages till the end of the chapter, then finish the chapter. Or if you have 8 minutes left in the episode, then mm-hmm. finish the episode. And I don't feel that way. I don't feel that way at all. I don't care. I 0% care about that.
That's so interesting.
I'm curious how you feel.
So sometimes out of necessity, I have to be flexible enough to stop. To be in control of the content.
Yeah.
And myself, be in control of myself and know that if Georgia or someone else needs me more than
yeah
whatever I'm consuming, then I have to be in control of myself and be cheerful in stopping what I'm
yes.
doing.
Yeah.
But, can you
I
hear
hope,
my daughter
I hope
laughing
everybody
at me?
Can hear her laugh because that was actually the best timing ever.
She has a pretzel rod, like
perfect.
I'm trying to think of, you know, like in some old cartoon where you like mm-hmm. put a stick in the alligator's mouth and
yeah,
then
so they can't
close
it.
Mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, that just, why is my brain wanting to go on a tangent about alligators? Not now.
you have?
Not now.
Wait, do you have an alligator tangent? Is there one? Do you have? Oh, okay.
I'm just so
like, wait, I would love to hear about an alligator.
And those of you that want to know what my husband has to deal with, like, this is a perfect example.
I'm with you. I'm with you. This is why I can turn a show off whenever I want to move on completely to something else. I don't care.
And I'm like, I haven't even officially gotten to my answer yet. And I'm just, so again, just welcome.
Welcome to another episode. Whenever you are.
I'm not going to answer it until I tell you what I was thinking about the alligator.
Okay, perfect. Please don't.
And this is a perfect example of why two best friends can just have a never-ending conversation.
We've never,
I guess,
we started and we just kept going.
So my thought was, this is so just the know-it-all in me.
Oh.
I'm like, okay, so you put the stick in the alligator's mouth when it's open so that it can't close its mouth.
Right.
And in my mind, I'm like, obviously that's not the right thing to do.
No.
Because, and here's how you know, because I'm a millennial, that I read one time that the muscles that an alligator uses to close its mouth are like astronomically stronger than the muscles it has to open its mouth.
Oh.
So I read one time that if you have the ability to defend yourself against an alligator, which you won't be able to have, like, sorry.
Yeah, we don't think you should fight alligators on this show. Yeah.
And if one has you, the very first thing it does is put you in its mouth. Like, it doesn't, its little arms are tiny. It walks in short bursts. Like, it's not doing anything with you anyway, other than bite you.
Right.
And death roll you.
Yes.
But so I'm like, the better thing to do if you had the ability to defend yourself would be to actually hold its mouth shut.
Oh,
so like, okay. Instead of trying to like keep it from shutting its mouth, because you would never have the strength to do that. Again, holding an alligator's mouth closed will not save your life. It just won't. Like, we're not making that endorsement here. But anyway.
But if you had to choose between one of the two, you don't want it. Don't give it the opportunity to open its mouth,
right?
Because it can absolutely snap a pretzel and a tree branch and whatever else you
put. And if you're in there already, like if you're in its mouth already, like you're not getting out. The best hope you have is to get the largest breath of oxygen you can possibly get and not
stab
be drowned. And I mean, I don't,
shoot
a
it.
Lot of them wouldn't really be, I don't know. Anyway, sorry. This is just,
that
this
was
has
our
gone
alligator.
On for too long.
That was our alligator
corner.
Welcome.
I live in Louisiana now. So
these are things
the
you need to know.
Alligators of any state. And
oh, really?
So now we have to have, yes, we do.
That's actually really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd think it would be Florida maybe, but I suppose because of their inordinate amount of serial killers there, they had to pass, the alligators had to go somewhere else
because,
you know.
Right, because they didn't want the competition.
You can't have too many deadly things in one state.
Otherwise,
no one would move there, except for if you have great
churches.
Property tax, tax laws.
Okay.
In that.
In churches.
Okay, so now that none of you care about my answer to the original question.
Do you remember the original question, dear listener?
So my preference would be to end.
Okay.
End the thing.
So if you were like, I'm really tired, it's 10 p.m. I don't know when you go to sleep. If it's 10 p.m., I'm dead to the world. And there's 8 minutes left in the episode. Do you finish it?
It depends on what it is.
Okay.
See, with books, I really like to get to the end of an episode.
You mean a chapter?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Chapter.
Nope. Chapter.
But when it comes to watching, usually by the time in our house we turn on TV, I am already in that phase of my day, which you just referred to, which is that if I lie down and stop doing anything, I will probably fall asleep.
Yes. Yes.
So the TV thing I have become much more accustomed to because since I was pregnant with Georgia, I think I've probably watched about 20 movies all the way through.
Yeah.
Like I don't do well laying down. I just don't.
Yeah.
But my preference, I do have to say, my preference is to kind of, I think my brain has a much easier time following the story if I can kind of like clip it at the determined time, which in my mind, so my defense of that, especially when it comes to books, is that it's not so much the content controlling me, it's the author. Because the author makes the call of like when is appropriate to like put those little breaks in.
That's what my husband says. He's like, no, okay. When they created the content, I'll pause it in the middle of the scene. Someone will be in the middle of a sentence, and I'm just like, okay, good night. And my husband's just like, you can't be serious.
That is madness to me. But it happens, but it's a totally external thing. It's not me being like, I'm done. I'm just done now.
That's me. I will peace out. A fight scene, I'll find out who won when I come back. I don't care. Like, I do not care.
That's enough of that for now.
Yep.
And the murderer was done.
It's 10:05. I'm tired. I do not care. I'm you know, he thinks that's completely lawless. And so I'm trying to be better about now that he's let me know that that drives him nuts. I'll wait till a scene is over. I'll be like on the edge of my seat. Like, is this scene over?
Right. Like to the point where you don't even care about the story anymore. You're just like,
when will this end?
Let's get to the next act of this.
Yes.
Okay. Stopping point. Okay.
I had a feeling that you would be more towards his.
Is that really I'm sorry, this is not much of a standard for anyone who doesn't personally know us, but is that kind of the way for us to determine what is a male versus female and what isn't agreement? It's like, if I agree with you, then we're talking male versus female.
Uh-huh.
If I agree with Eric, it's not a male versus female.
It's just
a person to person.
Yeah. I have kind of, I think, subconsciously determined that that's how it is. If I talk to you about it and you agree with him, I'm like, okay, this is just a little bit more of the conscientious person.
Okay.
I feel like you and Eric are much more like detail oriented. I think you guys have more similar thought processes than I do. Like I am like, so that's a little bit of my litmus test. But then, you know, I talk to you about the lighting because I'm like,
Well, that's
obviously a majority male female thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, men are just lawless with their lighting. They just turn on the hideous overhead lights. And they don't care.
And punish us all.
Absolutely insane. It's insanity. I go for walks at night a lot. And I'll see people just with, you know, just because I'm looking around. I'm not like peeking in anybody's houses. But, you know, when it's nighttime, you see the crazy people that have their bright overhead lights on. And it's wow. Are you guys okay in there? I don't think you're
right.
I think that
you
look stressed out from down here in the road. Oh, anyway. All right, that solves it. You guys can let us know about how lawless or unlawless, lawful, unlawful.
Well, and so the funny thing is that there's such a matter of perspective when it comes to this, because what you're deeming lawless is that anyone would give up precious sleep.
Yeah.
You're like, that's insane to me. Like, what could possibly be happening in the show that would be worth me losing an extra 5 minutes?
For me, the answer is absolutely nothing.
Right.
There's absolutely zero things happening. I'll be in the middle of a sentence in a book, and I'm like, nah.
Done. Bye. That
bookmark.
Is hilarious, yeah.
Later, I'm out. Also, that's another thing. I will use anything as a bookmark. And so my kids have had so much fun over the years going through my library and just like finding fun. Like, I've used plane tickets, I've used movie tickets, notes, stickers, you know, just I'll use anything. So my pictures. My kids will randomly bring me a picture of like a friend of mine from high school that's like was printed out at Walgreens or something in, you know, 2004. And they're like, who's this? And I'm like, where did you get this?
That's
and
hilarious.
Like, oh, turns out I was using it as a bookmark, 2 decades ago. And
I haven't had to use anything random as a bookmark because I made two purchases last year where the company sent extra stuff in with my order. Mm-hmm. One of those was Deeper Heaven, and Roman Rhodes sent a bunch of Deeper Heaven themed bookmarks plus classic reading bookmarks. And so I have like 10 bookmarks right now, and it's been kind of nice. Bookmarks they're not an absolute necessity, mm-mm. But I just keep them in two places. I have one in my bedside table and one sort of in the living room, because those are the two main places I read. And it's, you know, it's kind of, it's just a little
again,
adult.
This is the conscientious person that you are. I've never had that, like the fact that you're like, well, these are the two places that I read, so this is where I keep my bookmarks, is sounds so draining to me. If I had to do
that,
like that's exhausting.
Man.
How did you do that?
Oh,
I have
Dan, you would not believe the things I have exhausted myself over. just like what?
This is how anything is my bookmark. Like anything is my bookmark because I absolutely don't know where my bookmarks are.
That just—it's like the freedom in that. Wonderful.
I don't have the energy. Okay. Anyways, you guys can let us know what you use as bookmarks at 470-465-0475. Don't forget to support the show or join book club at patreon.com/sheologians. We are having a grandiose time. I just got to say, I told you guys. I told you so. I told you this book was awesome. We're so enjoying Five Lies of Our Anti-Christian Age by Rosaria Butterfield. And the people we have reading along with us have just been so much fun to talk to every week. And it's not too late. You can join us. You can watch any of our past discussions. We're only 4 chapters in right now. We're moving slowly because...
Yeah.
Like a good Puritan, every sentence she writes is full of something that can be discussed.
Yes.
So it's slow moving just in terms of the discussion because there's so much to cover. So one chapter.
Yeah, I do feel like this would be a book that you would be able to jump in on.
Yeah. Yeah, for
later,
sure.
Because she covers it. So it's not 5 chapters, but it's 5 lies of our anti-Christian age, hence the title. But it's broken down into like 3 to 5 sections in each lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, but even those sections kind of cover one thing. So I don't know.
Well,
if we're still inviting you. We're yes. not like, you could read, you could start from where we're at and then read, tack right. on what you didn't read yet on the end. I right. don't know.
She's very much, a former professor, and the book is like that. It's almost like a textbook where the title of the chapter, well, you can pick that up just about any time right. you want.
Yes. And that's why, yeah, we're so usually we would read more than we're reading at a time, but it seems like the pace of our discussion is right. keeping us
right.
I'm saying slowed down, but that's, I don't mean that to sound negative.
No, I'm definitely out of breath when we finish book club.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot going on.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, so, well, fear of God versus fear of man. I feel like this is kind of an ongoing conversation, although someone tweeted at me and said, if you're a podcaster and you call things a conversation, it makes her cringe. So I don't know how else to say it. I feel like we're kind of picking up where we left off last week a little bit.
Okay. So you pitched this to me and I had no idea what
okay.
your thought process was behind it.
Okay.
And so I'm looking forward to
okay. That's right. I haven't. So I'll let you in.
Like what you had.
Okay.
This I have things to say, but
yes.
let's see the direction
okay.
we're going.
So I've been thinking a lot about fear of God versus fear of man because of two things. Number one, because of a genre of email we get. And number two, because of a hilarious, meme that's going around right now. And by meme these days, I feel like memes are just actually TikToks and Instagram reels. I feel like they've morphed like the meme format where it's a static picture is a little bit dead.
Yeah.
And it's moving
yeah.
to short clips and videos. But I keep
Isn't
seeing
that just
this.
Interesting?
Yeah, it is interesting.
How things change.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But there's this thing that keeps coming up in my social media feed where it's like the question, and I think it's a genuine question people are asking, is like, hey, for those of you who don't care what people think of you, how? And they kind of
yeah.
let it hang. They're like, how?
Mm-hmm.
How do you not care what people think of you? What, how does, and then people are answering, they're giving their answers, but their answers are usually either just for comedic purposes or it's a joke or they're genuine answers that aren't great answers. And then,
yeah,
this was a two-pronged thing for me is, and this might be surprising, but I think as I talk more, it'll make sense. But we get a lot of emails. We've done several episodes now on friendship. What is a friend? How do you deal with friendship problems? It's a very common question, and it's still a genre of email. I get this email, and people will often add more specific details about their specific issues that they're having, but it really comes down to a question of, like, how do I be a friend, or how do I deal with this friend who's difficult? To really oversimplify that genre of question. And I actually think that the answer so often is fear God, not man. Like, I really think that's the overriding principle with these emails and with that meme. How do you not care what people think about you?
Yeah.
Well, you fear God, not man. And obviously there are ways that you can not care what people think about you. That's actually flawed. It's actually
yeah.
it's actually a not caring about others issue,
right.
which is not the same thing as fearing God and not man. but I think that's when people are trying to answer that question for real, and they're not just trying to be funny. Their answers are just often so they fall so flat. They fall into the category of just not caring about people.
Right.
You know, it'll be people who are like, And, you know, I don't think this is totally off topic, but I think we all know that genre of person that's like, I'm just not comfortable. I'm more comfortable around animals, right? Like, I prefer animals. My animals understand me, which I think is a whole problem in and of itself and is a rejection of the image of God, but I didn't mean to talk about that today. so that's its own category. But when it comes to, here's what I mean about the friendship problem. When people are having a hard time with their friends, or their friend is doing something they don't like, so often I feel like the advice I want to give is really summed up in, well, are you fearing your friend in this situation, or are you fearing God? When you're being disliked, is like your response a fear of that person or a fear of God? When you don't know how to confront somebody, do you really not know how to confront them, or are you being fearful of being disliked? And I would say again, that's a failure of fearing man more than God. And so, and then again, when we were talking about this, this just keeps coming up for me. When we're talking about principles versus methods, I think a lot of times when people get tripped up or bothered by, well, so-and-so is doing this method and they think this method is great, and that bothers me because I would never do that. It's like, well, but who cares? Like, right. Who cares?
Yeah.
Who are you fearing in this scenario? Are you fearing that person not approving you? Because who cares? Are you going to be approved by God? So in all of these different scenarios, when you have this focus of, okay, well, I'm here to please God and not all these individuals around me, I think a lot of those fears and concerns about whether you're doing what's right or whether how you're confronting is right goes away. And then ultimately, if you are fearing God, if your behavior could be called God-fearing behavior, it's going to live up to God's standards, which is a really safe place to be. Like, that's a really safe direction to go. When your concern is, does this please God? That provides safety in a way that all these other things don't. So anyway, that's where I'm coming from.
As you were talking, there is sort of a, you touched on something, which is important to point out. Sometimes you may be in a situation where you are wanting people to fear you, like you're specifically the specific man. So when it comes to the whole principles versus methods thing that we laid out last week, sometimes what you're asking for is that your friends, like, well, I'm just trying to imagine the email. There is the email that's like, I kind of want to do this, but all my friends do this and I want to do the right thing. And that's where it's like, fear God, not man. But then we also have this situation where it's like, why doesn't my friend do this thing that I like, this method that I like? And in that instance, you are actually requiring of your Christian brethren to fear you and not God. And so, I don't know. That's just something that kind of popped into my head as you were walking us through that. But yeah, I get that. I think that, well, as we already kind of alluded to in our chatting, there is a difference between you and I. And I think the nice way, the positive way to frame the personality trait is thoughtful, conscientious. Sorry, George is trying to talk to me right now.
Yeah. She's so cute.
She said, tell her that she's the best friend.
Georgia. Oh, that's not.
Oh, sorry. Oh, that you're my best friend.
Oh.
True.
Yeah. It's established. I mean, Thank you, Georgia. Georgia likes to just come and tell the truth and then peace just, out.
She just walked away. She's like, my contribution. Thank you.
Thank you, Georgia.
But yeah, I do think that there are some of us that are going to be a little more preoccupied with what other people think and feel. And in some cases, that's a nice, very kind thing. And in some cases, it's fearing man versus fearing God. So some of us will have to practice a little bit more. But I think maybe that's the answer for many of us. How do you not care what people think of you is just practicing that. And it's not practicing, I just don't want anyone to care about anything I do. I just want them to see me as this, autonomous individual. So I do think it's more about fearing God versus fearing man, as opposed to how do I just not care what people think of me at all? Because like you said, we should care that people, we've talked endlessly about, we should care that people find us friendly, pleasant to be around.
Yeah.
Self-sacrificing.
Yeah. I think the question people have is, because what you just said is true. So I do want, if you read the Westminster about like what's in a person's good name, like protecting other people's good name, or the fact, like, we used to have this idea that like your name meant a lot, right? Like it was the seat of honor. Like when people say,
right,
oh, that's Joy, like you want your reputation to conform to what or how Christ has said that we should live and how we should be. Okay. So we agree on that. Read the Westminster on the ninth commandment. What's required of us in the ninth commandment. It's very interesting. It's good to just sit down and read sometimes. But so there's this, I think where the question people have is, okay, if I'm supposed to fear God, not man, but I'm also supposed to care in a certain way what people think of me, how do I bridge the two? And I still stubbornly think the answer is make sure that when you are living your life and you are going about your business, that your primary focus is pleasing God. Like, we're not supposed to be man pleasers. So if your focus is just on your reputation for the sake of your reputation and that everybody around you feel a certain way, it's going to be very obvious. What are you going to be? You're going to be a flatterer, which you ought not be.
Right. Liar.
Liar. It makes you dishonest. It makes you two-faced. It makes you hypocritical. People know this. Like, people can sniff this out a mile away most of the time. But I think it can be anxiety-inducing because people's standards change, but God's doesn't. And people are not omniscient. They are not all-knowing. So there might be a way in which people perceive you that is not accurate, is not, you know what I mean? Like, people can misunderstand you. People, all of those, again, the answer is, who am I serving? Like, who is my focus here? Who am I primarily attempting to please? And it's not that you should never try to please anybody. It's totally fine wanting to make the people around you happy, but if your ultimate question is, does everybody in this room like me? I think you're going to be miserable, because I just got to tell you guys, sometimes people don't like you. Like, that's just all there is to it.
No,
it can't be a focus of your life. It can't be a focus of the seat of your feelings cannot be, how does everybody else feel about me? You are going to be tossed to and fro, and you're not going to end up with the reputation that you should actually be striving for if that is where you're placing your feelings.
I think you're going to become unlikable, honestly. I'm not saying, like, look, I do the thing where I leave a social interaction and I'm like, did I say anything dumb? Like, how do all those people think about me? But it was way worse when I was young. And actually, I was just talking with Matthew about this, but when we're immature and we feel a certain type of way about people, about not being able to control how people feel about us or perceive us or whatever, we just throw a big fit all the time or often, and we become mopey, or we become sort of like angry and kind of demand all the attention be on us, or you sort of float into the background, and the amount of attention you're not putting on yourself, it makes it feel weird. It makes it feel, it's like, why are you in this social setting? Because you clearly don't want to be here. So it's like sort of a weird way of putting the attention on yourself again. I'm just saying that if you really are obsessed and just completely preoccupied with what people think of you, it's kind of bratty.
Well, it's very self-focused. It's very self-focused.
Conceited.
Yeah.
Totally conceited.
Yeah.
It's completely conceited. And I think back to moments when I have behaved that way and when I was being as a brat. I was being bratty. And no, I'm sorry, but nobody likes a brat. Nobody wants to hang out with a brat. And honestly, a brat is rude to people who are willing to overlook your bratty. They're like, I'm going to extend the hand of friendship. I'm going to be gracious to you and like try to be your friend, and you're still unlikable. And it's just, I think that there has to be a moment where, it also just indicates that you are spending quite a bit of time thinking about the wrong things. And that's where maybe people don't understand what fearing the Lord is. They don't. They're almost just like, okay, yeah, I know what that means. Like, he's powerful. He is good. He is the fullness of all the attributes, and he is truth and all these things. And so I would approach him on my face because I can't even, like, he could just smash me. But so I had heard a sermon that basically it was Douglas Wilson, and he was talking about like fear of the Lord being associated with the law. Like, when you fear the Lord, you follow his law. And of course, the law is his word. If you fear the Lord, you will live by the law. So if the concern is, am I doing the right thing? Fearing the Lord will lead to you following his law, which is the right thing. Now, I know in some situations there is debate about how do we perfectly follow all the commands? How do we, you know, and that's a conversation you can have, you should be able to have without fearing man. But I understand that doesn't always happen.
Right.
But so he was kind of saying, he was basically saying that, like, the fear is produced, like, the strictness of his law is what produces fearing God, because it is the acknowledgement of what we are unable to do. And it was the cost of the sacrifice that was made for us. And I think that just, I just think that fearing the Lord is a little bit more than just a head nod to like, yes, I know that God can squash me and that he's all powerful, and all of that, but it's just, it's more than that. I don't know. I think we're focused. The focus doesn't need to be as much on man. I mean, that's the point. Fear God, not man. But I don't know. I think you're going to have to determine what fearing God looks like. What does it take to follow his law? You're going to have to know what it says. You're going to have to study what it says. You're going to have to ask your husband what it says. You're going to, yeah. I don't know.
Well, I think a great quick litmus test I have for myself is if I'm trying to determine, like, am I fearing the Lord in this instead of man? The quick kind of like test I do is like, okay, who am I concerned about pleasing right now? And, or is what I'm doing pleasing to the Lord? So if the answer is no, then I have to, repent. Like, I have to change track totally. And sometimes that, I understand sometimes it can be emotional. So some emails we get are like, what do I do? Like, this person genuinely doesn't like me, but like, I'm not doing anything wrong. Like, I haven't sinned against them. I've offered friendship to them. I've extended love to them, but they just don't want it. They don't want to be my friend. They're not interested in it. And it's like, yeah, well, that can be painful when someone just doesn't want, someone just doesn't like you. But if you genuinely haven't sinned against them, have not like really there's nothing to like reconcile or confess and repent of, then I think fearing God in that scenario is like, okay, like, and loving that person who just genuinely doesn't like you or doesn't really want to be involved in your life is like, well, just loving them anyway. And I don't mean knocking down their door and insisting that they give you all their time. Like, that is not, like, sometimes you have to let things go. Like, sometimes you just need to accept, like, okay, there's no sin to repent of here. So what I'm going to do is what's in front of me today. And I think sometimes we want people in our lives and the Lord's like, no, like, this person isn't in your life right now. Like, this, that's just not how this is going to be.
Yeah.
And you just have to, and what that means is you don't get to be bitter towards them or just like grow bitterness. You don't get to go around feeling offended. Like, you need to deal with, and also I think it's a little bit like ungrateful. Like, I'm sure like hyper-focusing on this one person is probably leading to the neglect of focus on the people who are in your life, who are,
right,
who do, you know what I mean? Who do want to be there and are offering friendship. And so, that's where I think, okay, in this situation that is uncomfortable and maybe sad, it's like, well, move on. Like, fearing God means moving on.
I think you can cross over into mind your own business territory too. I think that if you meet another person who is a believer and you have no reason, like, they attend your church, you, like, they're a believer as far as you know and everyone around them. If they are deeply unpleasant, they're being sanctified if they're a believer. And if God's not using you, if there is a big wall up and that you are not welcome in their life, then clearly it's not your business. Like, I mean, and you know, in some instances that it may become your business, especially if you continue to be kind. But it's not if you're if you're becoming preoccupied with why someone doesn't like you, then, well, you might be enjoying their sin a little bit too much, which we sometimes do because it's much
a distraction from our own.
To do, right. Yeah. Right. But that's what I mean. Like in that moment, that would fall into not your business. Like it's clearly their sin involved if they're deeply unpleasant, but clearly I'm not being used by God to sanctify this person. So this isn't my business. I must move on. I have other business to do. I would say that you should not, if you're trying to fear God rather than man, you should not make a habit of determining what is your business based off of what other people are saying or doing. Your business should be fearing God. And if it's not that, then you're becoming a busybody.
Right.
That's right. Just what you're doing. If you're always, that's what a busybody is someone that's always minding other people's busyness, right?
Like right. Yes. Yeah.
They've made their business what other people are doing. And that's definitely right. Falls into the category of fearing man, not God.
Right. I think there's one other major kind of locus that I think this principle answers when people are asking about methods. I think this principle answers the method, and this is when it comes to how we ought to dress. And when people get all tangled up in the modesty question and the how should we dress question, I really think if your guiding principle is fearing God and not man, this is not a tangle. Like there's no web here. There's no trap for you to accidentally fall into or to get into squabbles with other believers about if the guiding principle is fear God, not man. And I know that I'm not stupid. I understand that you are going to go to church with people who you might go to church with somebody who thinks women should not wear pants. You might go to church with somebody who thinks that jean skirts are the only permissible thing. You might go to church with somebody who wears shorts that you would not wear. You're going to go. You're going to be around people, Christians in particular. And not all of us are going to have the same, not all of us are going to agree lockstep on this. What I'm saying is, as we're all sanctified and, maybe you've had a believer say to you, like, your clothes are inappropriate. And what I'm saying is you should take what they said. You should assess it through the lens of scripture. Ask yourself, am I fearing God with my dress or am I fearing man? Talk to your, I don't know, dad, husband, whoever, and then go from there. Like this, it really is a question. Clothing really is a question of fearing God versus fearing man. 100%. 100% of the time. And I'm not saying that it's always cut and dry because, man, there's so many, how many different kinds of clothing are there? There's so many. And how many opinions are there? Just as many. But filter it through this guiding principle. Who do my clothes please? Who am I pleasing with this outfit? If the answer is not God, it's disobedient. The end.
I still hear the people going, but Summer, just give me the list of all the things I'm allowed to wear.
I will not.
There isn't one.
The
list is, we just gave it to you. Things that please God. Imagine the paper and the one thing written on it. That's the list.
Right. And I absolutely believe that, if you are really struggling on this issue, I absolutely believe a great thing to do if you're married would be to talk to your husband.
Yeah.
If you're really genuinely just lost, like, there's got to be an older Christian sister in your church who is willing to stand there in your closet right. with you
yeah.
and talk to you about it. Like, that,
and someone that is not, someone that is not requiring of you to fear them. That's, and so, yeah, for those of you that are older and more mature in your faith, that is a good focus for you, more than likely, which is that if you think that the best way to dress is like a Puritan or fresh out of Little House on the Prairie, that's great. I think that's a great style. Love it. Certain components of that are wonderful. And I want to see you in your bonnets. Like, love it. But the mature lady isn't going to require some young girl that comes to her to fear her and say, like, well, everyone knows that, like, if you're not wearing your bonnet, then that's just immodest. You may as well be wearing a crop top. And it's like, those things clearly aren't the same. They're clearly not the same.
Yeah. If you don't know that, I might question your status as right. more mature believer.
Right. Yes. And so I do think that there is, yeah, I think there's a double-sided thing going on here, which is that the less mature of us are fearing man and not God, or we're just questioning what that looks like, perhaps even. But yeah, there is another component, which is that there are people in churches that are asking people to fear them. And so then young, impressionable, or less mature believers are coming to them, and mm-hmm. then they are adopting their methods of modesty based off of not what God says, but what this right. person says. So even in your private convictions, mm-hmm. it's okay to share in cultural beliefs. It's okay to have deep respect for people that are over you, that you trust. And I think that you'll sort of naturally adopt the culture in that sense. So I'm not saying you can't do anything like anybody else that's around you. But you can fit into the culture of a church or a group of people while fearing God. So fearing God is still the top thing.
Right.
So yeah, I don't think I have anything else to say.
My last thought is I really do think that the answer to the question is, like, how do you not care what other people think? And it's not that you don't care about other people. It's that your ultimate concern is to worship and please the Lord. And if you are in prayer and in the Word and you are confessing and repenting your sins, you're not going to end up living a life full of insecurity about every little decision that you make and every little feeling that everyone around you has.
Yeah.
Being stubborn about what is true and right and good, always, I think the Lord blesses, because that's faithfulness. Like, being like, no, I'm going to do what's true and right and good, no matter how anyone else feels about it, is a way of life that the Lord blesses. And it might not look like material blessing. It might come as material blessing. It might not. But it is a blessing. And I think that the Lord provides the grace that you need in those moments. And as we discussed, we are very two different people. I have to work rather hard to care what anybody thinks. That I have to practice caring what people think, because that's not natural to me. And I'm not saying that that's great. I'm saying that that can be its own genre of problem. There's two different sides here. There's two different.
We need both kinds of people. We really do need.
There's
both
two potential. There's two potential sins, is what I'm saying. And it's not that I don't care how anyone around me feels, because I do. But what I can say is that when you know, because it's clear as day in scripture, that what you're doing is right, you can just not care about any other noise. Like, right. If you're just being obedient to the word, I'm telling you right now, you don't have to care if other people don't like it. And you don't have to be rude about it, and you don't have to be brazen about it, and you don't have to, like, mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you get to be a jerk.
Yeah.
But what it does mean is, like, it should not keep you up at night. If you're being obedient, no sweat.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a humble way to do that.
Right.
And I'm sure anyone listening can think of an example of how that has not been done humbly. But there is a humble way to do it. And it's just like, and even just humble in the humble knowing that you may change your mind about something. I'm not saying that
humble knowing that you've been wrong about things before.
Yeah. Like, right. Yeah.
Humble and, knowing that the Lord will sanctify his children.
Right. Right. So that means that in certain circumstances, there are people who are maybe not doing the most faithful thing. Their focus is fear of the Lord. They don't know. There's some ignorance. I don't think that should continue for long periods of time. And especially not after the law. They know of the law. They're no longer ignorant. but there's also sin. There's also people who are Christians that fear the Lord in many, many ways. And in some ways, they are sinful in their practice or their belief. I'm not saying that's right. And I'm not saying, oh, well, God doesn't expect us to be perfect, because he actually does. That's why he had to send his son to die for us, because he knew we couldn't do it, but he does require it. I just relax a little bit. Just relax.
There we go.
Just relax. Just relax. Just relax. And even if you're wrong, what is the worst thing that's gonna happen? If you're going to be corrected, you're going to be sanctified. Hopefully you have people around you that you would trust to correct you. It's just, I don't know. I think if you're an extension of fearing the Lord is, so obviously fearing the Lord is doing things that are pleasing to him and his law. And so even if you're just, if you're freaking out about everything, like, just try to keep it simple. Keep it to, like, I know this is in the Bible. 100%. Like, I know I can do this, and there's no conversation about this. Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm being faithful in this way. I think sometimes sometimes people are not going to agree with you, and that doesn't even mean they won't like you.
Right. Oh, sure.
Does that make sense? Like, I think.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about
the anxiety of, like, the anxiety of being disliked. Just because someone disagrees with you doesn't always mean they're not going to like you.
Well, the anxiety of being disliked involves a lot of storytelling on your part. Things you don't. If you're not willing to ever do anything that someone will potentially disagree with, then all you have done is told yourself stories about what might happen if someone disagrees with you, and you haven't actually, like, let's just focus on that, like, yeah. Don't live in false reality. That's,
yeah. But that's, let's also, I mean, also just the pride involved in needing everybody to like every decision you make is really,
and that just
a lot to carry.
That just comes from our culture. Just understand that comes from our, that is the culture of self-esteem. That is what we grew up in, especially as millennials. That is the, like, you accept me for who I am. If you don't accept me for who I am, then that is an assault on my worth. That's not where we get our worth from. We don't get our worth from ourselves. This is just, again, This is us brushing the cobwebs out of the corners. These are the things that are a part of how we think because of how we were discipled, especially those of us that went to public school. This is just the psychology, aka philosophy, of how we grew up. We gotta keep working through these things with ourselves. Like, it just takes some time.
Yes. And the corrective to that, the corrective to needing people to like every decision you make, is to ask yourself, wait, do I care what everyone thinks, or do I care what God thinks? And how does God feel about it? Maybe you are doing something super stupid and everyone's trying to tell you, and maybe you haven't asked, like, oh, what does God think about it? And if it's stupid and God thinks it's stupid, then you should probably stop doing it and then thank everybody who's been trying to tell you that you're being a big stupid head. I mean, sometimes like the thing that you have to do. And pride doesn't let you do that. And like you said, our culture is like, every choice that you make is, you know, you're a beautiful butterfly, so nobody gets to say boo to you. But if everybody around you thinks that you're being stupid, that is something you ought to consider. And then go, okay, but what does God think about it? And just so you know, if God thinks it's stupid, it's stupid. And if God's pleased, then you get to ignore everybody around you, and you should probably get some new friends if that's what's happening. So anyway, that's it. That's what we got, I think.
Yes.
Don't be there a stupid head if you take anything.
It just popped into my head. I'm like, I don't even know. Luke 6 somewhere, but I'm sure everyone is familiar. But the woe to you when all people speak well of you. The specific verse says, for so their fathers did to the false prophets. It's like if all people speak well of you, just why? Why is that? Is it because you are a God-fearing, pleasant servant? Great. Is it because they also praise false prophets? Or
because you're a flatterer who changes face for whatever room you're in?
Yeah, you're a person who just pretends to be likable while you freak out about everyone's perceptions and feelings.
All right, you guys. That's it. You guys you can let us know. You can leave us a voicemail at 470-465-0475. And make sure that you fear God this week, and we'll see you next week.
Yeah.